Welcome to Make It Simple, where we take complicated issues and, with the help of an expert, break them down into ideas we can understand, truths we can apply, and questions worth pondering. I'm Matt Popovitz, and with me is my friend and co-host, Rachel Ryder. Rachel, it's great to see you again, and I'm looking forward to today's conversation, even though some might say that the thing we're going to talk about today is kind of a downer.
Man, we are like hitting the heavy topics, right?
We are.
So just, we're going to be talking about lament, which isn't even a word in my vocabulary most days, but we're talking about lament and grief and practically how that shows up in our lives with Tara McDaniel.
Yeah, yeah. So the subject is, as you said, it's lament, which is typically a word used just, you know, when you maybe peruse the scriptures or you're in church. It's kind of a niche word, but lament is a close cousin to grief and an important part of the human experience and an important part, as we're going to learn from Tara McDaniel, of Christian spirituality. If you're not familiar with Tara, Tara is a spiritual director for adults and children. She spent a few decades as a pastor and ministry leader and studied at Portland Seminary. And she wrote More Than Ordinary with Doug Sherman. She's a regular contributor all across the internet. And she is the author of a new book called Hopeful Lament, Tending Our Grief Through Spiritual Practices. So we're going to talk to her about this book and about the practice of lament. Rachel, is there anything in particular that you're looking forward to in our conversation with Tara?
Matt, I don't even want to have this conversation.
Why is that?
No, I'm joking. I think this is going to be really important. I'm interested in this idea of lament and like honoring our grief by giving words to it.
Right.
And so, but not really knowing where to start with that without seeming too, I just don't even know what to do with that or what my relationship with that should be. So I'm just excited to like get into it and talk with her about this.
Yeah, I think lament is kind of untouched spiritual territory for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like we know that there's a kind of spiritual complaining that's allowed, right? Maybe that's how we think of it, but we don't know what to do with it or how to practice it. So I'm thankful that we're talking about this because it's something that is crucial to a lived faith. And a healthy faith, but it's something that we really don't teach people in the Christian faith much anymore. And so I'm thankful that that Tara is kind of resurrecting a conversation about this because I do think it's an important one. Like, how do we connect grief and spirituality? And lament really is the answer. And so if we want to integrate our grief into our faith, then we have to learn to lament. Right. And so this is, I think this is an important topic. So our expert is Tara McDaniel. Our subject is lament. And what do you say, Rachel, we dive in to this important conversation.
Tara, thank you so much for joining us today. We are so happy to have you here.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're really covering a pretty heavy topic when we talk about lament and even hopeful lament, your book and everything. But before we even get into it, I was hoping you could just start by telling us, like, how is this topic near and dear to your heart? What's a little bit of your story? And if you could start by sharing that with us, I think it's a really good foundation before we get into this.
Absolutely. So as I talk about in the introduction, I don't think anyone sort of wakes up one day and is like, you know what? I want to learn more about grief. I want to figure out, like, lament seems like that would be interesting. Like, I don't think anyone wakes up with that sort of thought. I certainly did not. I came to lament because of need, because of encountering loss and upheaval, you know, for myself and with my family. And, you know, at the time we had spent several decades in pastoral ministry and, you know, deep study of scripture and discipling others. And so I would have thought, and I did think at the time, okay, I know what to do. I have the tools that I need. I have this longstanding, you know, deep faith connection with God. I'll be okay. And what I discovered was there was a sense in which that was true, but there was also a sense in which I didn't have the language or the tools that I needed to really process the heaviness, the grief, the hard questions. And you said, how did I come to, you know, even asking these questions? Mm-hmm. So my family and I, about 15 years ago, had a few years of, you know, just sort of compounding losses, of all different sorts, that included, my daughter receiving a threat of violence, when she was a freshman in college. Some fraud in my husband's business that set off, you know, just a series of financial and reputation challenges. Some difficulty in a church that we had helped start that ultimately we had to say goodbye to, and so we lost friends and community. And then kind of it sort of culminated in, we had some family members that were visiting who accidentally started a house fire, that it started. So we were kind of at the edge of the hill country near Austin, Texas. And so we were kind of nestled into a hill. And because of how the fire started at the bottom of that hill, it was, you know, you hear those stories where all we could do is get out, you know, and that was our experience. By the time we were aware of the fire, it was beyond anything, you know. And so, yeah. And so that led to this exploration and this experience of what mm-hmm. to do with grief.
Tara, will you talk a little bit about when you talk about grief and lament, is there a distinction between the two? Are those two different things? Are they complementary? Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's one sense in which lament can simply, you know, be synonymous with grief. It can be grieving, but how I think about it in the book, when it shifts to lament as an action, there is a difference. And when you think about lament as a practice to engage, as a spiritual practice to engage, even a practice of prayer or conversation with God, it is about giving voice to, giving expression to grief so that, to use kind of Resmaa Menakem's phrase, so that pain can be metabolized, so it doesn't keep living in us and sort of staying stuck, but it moves through.
So who first introduced you to this idea that you could take this increasing level of grief that you're experiencing as these kind of losses mount for you, right? That you could take it and you could express it in this way, and that it wasn't merely an expression of your pain, but actually a spiritual practice. Who introduced you to that idea?
Well, not just one person, I would say. I think I first encountered that wisdom with my own spiritual director, when he asked, you know, I remember going to him with this question, you know, I think my faith is broken. What do I do? And his response was, I wonder if it's not your faith that's broken, but your theology that's broken and is in need of repair. And so that kind of opened the door to what does God have room for? What does God have capacity for? What kinds of interactions does God welcome from me? Is it just thank you and please help and, you know, I praise you and you're so good and, you know, or is there also capacity for this is hard. I don't like this. Where were you? Why did you let this happen? Things like that. I also remember some authors like Henry Nouwen, you know, have just some great wisdom around healing and life and, you know, the kind of speech that God's welcomes. I remember reading a couple of even just the daily sort of devotions that Richard Rohr and the Center for Action and Contemplation, I remember some key moments where they began to talk about lament in ways that were just fitting with all mm-hmm. with all of that I was learning and all that I was experiencing.
Mm-hmm. So as I'm understanding what you're saying, lament is like giving voice mm-hmm. to that pain and that hurt and that grief. How do you respond? Let me put it this way. There are times, and I don't know if it's just unique to Christians or humanity, where I think, well, it's going to be just, it's complaining. It just sounds like complaining if I'm just laying bare all the hard things instead of, and so how do you navigate that tension?
Great question. And an important question too, like in so many Christian spaces, spiritual spaces, mm-hmm. You know, there might be room for grief if it's tidy, if it's packaged, if it's a one and done kind of right. thing. You've lost a family member, something like that. Okay, you can cry a little, you can have a funeral, and you know, and then there's this expectation oftentimes that we move back into praise. Right. Yeah, so all that to say, I think my first response is go to the Psalms, go to the prophets, and you will see prophets, David, modeling, complaining to God, saying, "Hey, God, you know, things are unjust, things are painful, things are hard." So I would say I think that would be my first response, would be to say that we're in good company to complain. But to get at the heart of what you're really asking, it's more this idea that mm-hmm. grief is negativity, or that it's self-fulfilling, or that it is at odds with a mature faith. And I think it's so important for us to very directly and kindly mm-hmm. say, that's not true. That's not true. Mm. To grieve and to bring that grief in embodied ways, to speak it, to sing it, to write it, to live it with God over time. Mm-hmm. That's faithfulness. That's faithfulness. And it's part of being honest about what is. It's part of health and healing. And it's part of following the examples of the spiritual mothers and fathers that have gone before us, and including the example of Jesus.
You know, there is, and I think this is where the conversation is kind of going, at least right this moment, that there is a lot of shame connected to grief. There's a lot of unnecessary guilt associated with articulating your pain. Because as you said, it can feel self-indulgent, or as though we are being self-pitying. Mm-hmm. And so there's this mm-hmm. sense in so many of us, and I felt it at times, where I'm not allowed to articulate my pains. Or if I had enough faith, not only would I not have so many complaints or I wouldn't feel mm-hmm. these losses so deeply, right? And so that my need to lament can often inappropriately be interpreted as a lack of faith, and something I'm made to feel bad for. Have you encountered people saying similar things as you've taught about this?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. There can be a lot of shame. You know, why can't I get over this? You know, what's wrong with me? That kind of thing. And you know, what I have learned by experience, what I've learned as I've journeyed with others, is that grief is exhausting. Lament is it's heavy. I describe it as heavy lifting. It's hard work. And so that means, if that's so, and I believe it is, it means being patient, you know, and letting grief take the time that it needs to take. And it means not staying in it interminably. So, having a practice of moderating, moving into lament practices and getting outside and, you know, taking a breath of fresh air, getting your feet in the grass or in the sand or that kind of thing. And all of those things, really give permission, and they can quiet those loud messages that say you're too much, just get over it. Mm. God's going to work it all for good. You know, every cloud has a silver lining. You know, those kinds of things. That posture can answer, you know, those and quiet those messages, which are unhelpful and are often pretty loud.
Tara, what do we stand to lose if we never learn to lament? What are we missing out on?
I think it's so much. I think we are missing out on our own humanity, the fullness of it. You know, if we are created in God's image and we're here in this broken world, we will encounter reasons to lament. That is just the human condition, right? And so to refuse to learn these lessons means to forego at least a part of our humanity. And it also means we will forego the fullness of connection that can be possible with others in our communities, because we won't have capacity for their grief, you know, for their loss, wrestling with pain over time. And the last thing that we are missing out on is a real authentic connection with the holy, connection with God. If we're not bringing God our grief, right, our loss, our sadness, our questions, wow, we're not bringing ourselves. We're not bringing our whole selves.
Yeah. You've said a couple of things. I'm getting this picture of like sometimes our grief just feels so big. You know, it feels like it. You said it like, it's too much. I'm just like a mess all over people and that kind of thing. And I guess I'm wondering why we have this tendency to feel like our grief is just so scary that we have to like, it's too big, it's too scary. Yeah. I just need to hide it away. Mm-hmm. Why is that our inclination?
Or if I could even add on to that, sorry to interrupt you, Tara, like, just to tack onto that, like I can feel, and I hear this from people that I work with as a pastor, like if they start, they fear they'll never stop. Because the grief or the pain is so big, they don't want to give themselves permission to start to lament because they feel like they might get lost in it. Like they might lose themselves in it. Like it's this deep, dark sea that they're going to drown in. And so, you know, yes, speak to that. Why do we think our grief is so big that we can't even begin to articulate it?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, thank you for the tack on and you know for the fullness of that because it's you're exactly right. You know, Diane Langberg talks about, she works as a works with survivors of trauma, and she says she will often hear that with trauma survivors. You know, I'm afraid if I start to cry, I'll never stop. Things like that. And so let me start by saying, I think that sometimes we fear grief because it is frightening, you know, because it is heavy lifting. And that is where not staying in those dark places for too long and just as important, not staying in them alone, not staying in places of engaging lament alone, for too long. So keeping it safe in that sense. So that means, you know, telling a trustworthy friend that you're struggling. It might mean finding a therapist who can work with you. It might mean finding a pastoral counselor or a spiritual director who can kind of accompany you and bear witness so that you're not alone. So that's one thing. And can I just say that is not a new that the idea of grief being too hard or something that we resist. We're not new to that. We have a modern take on it, no doubt, particularly in this country, where grief is seen as like negativity or, you know, like I said, self-fulfilling, things like that. You know, the power of positive thinking. We're Americans. We pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, you know, all of that kind of plays into it. But, you know, even looking back at the story of Job, you see, you know, while his friends were able to simply be present with him at first, pretty quickly they move to explaining it away and distancing themselves, mm-hmm. most importantly, from it by placing blame. And so, so all of those things, kind of contribute to the ways that grief can be resisted. And I think the more we're having conversations like these, the more it gives permission to, okay, it is possible to engage lament without it taking over.
On the other end of the spectrum, I imagine that there are some folks who feel like their lament or their grief is not too big that they might get lost in it, but too small and that it doesn't really matter, right? Like maybe they constantly compare whatever it is that they're grieving, whatever loss or hurt that they have, they compare it to, some of the things that people are dealing with around the world or other people in their life. And they go, well, this is just small stuff. And surely this is not worthy of a lament, a cry of lament to the God of the universe. So what do you say to someone who might think, you know what, my lament is too small or too petty for the divine?
Yeah. Oh man, great question. I'll start by saying it's not too small. And our griefs are as particular as our own souls and our own lives. And so it doesn't serve to compare and to say, well, my pain isn't as important as someone else's, or because it's not this deeply traumatic story, or because I'm not living in a war zone, or because, on and on and on, that it doesn't matter. That's not accurate. And so to honor your own soul and your own joys and your own, the things for which you are grateful alongside the things that you grieve without comparison. Now, one thing that it can do is place your story in perspective. I think that can be a helpful thing. But when it comes with a tone or a flavor of, I'm petty or I'm, or anything like that, that's not coming from the truest part of you.
So Tara, let's say somebody's listening and they're like, okay, I'm on board. I want to lament. I've got some things I need to do. You mentioned a couple of the spiritual practices. You said get outside, get into the Psalms. But what do you say to somebody that, because you hear that word lament and it feels like a Bible word, I don't even know, like, do I just go around telling everybody I'm having crappy day
does that
all
count?
The time?
Does that
like, what is, so like, what would you say? Like, where, yeah. Right. Where do you start? Like, where does a person, what, could you just share with us some more of those spiritual practices and like speak to that person who's like, I'm new to this. I'm resonating. What do I do? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. So the Bible is full of these really visceral embodied responses to grief and loss. Things like, pouring ashes in the hair, tearing garments, lying on the ground, crying out loud, a wail or, keening as it has been embodied in Ireland. And so those practices are there and we can model them and adapt them, for our context. And so if you're listening to this and you recognize you have some things to lament, my encouragement is find some paper or cloth to tear. You might have an old newspaper, old magazines, catalogs, junk mail. You might have old t-shirts, let yourself tear the cloth as you are having a conversation with your own soul and even inviting God into it. Let it be an embodied prayer. So that's one place that you can start. I'll mention one more practice for now, just by way of introduction. If you are listening and you are realizing you have kind of a lot of things to grieve, maybe it's personal, maybe you're going through, you're accompanying someone who is seriously ill, maybe you are just grieving the headlines that you read every morning, maybe a combination thereof. you can take a jar of water and a salt shaker. And this idea, you know, is lifted right from Psalm 56, where it talks about God preserving our tears like treasures, right? And so every time you have a pang of grief or a thought of that loss, you shake, you know, some salt into that jar, and by way of, you know, illustrating the grief, and actual tears can accompany that shaking, and that those can be welcome as well, and let that be a living reminder of grief and of that grief being allowed, and not just allowed, but welcome and treasured.
You've made the point a couple times that lament is an embodied expression of grief and loss. And I think that's something that, you know, for so many Westerners is we have hyper intellectualized and internalized what it means to be a person of faith and really what it means to be a human, right? Like we've kind of disconnected our humanity from our physical self, right? And what you do see, and what you're reminding us of is, you know, what we do see in the scriptures is that there is no disconnect so often between the internal life of faith and the external physical life that I'm living. These things have to be connected. And I just want to say that I appreciate that, that what you gave us is not something to say or something to think, but something to do with, like physically do with our grief and with our pain, and that physical action is an expression of lament, because you're right. That's what we see demonstrated in the scriptures, right? And we can't forget that we are people with, like to be human is to have a body, right? And as the expression goes, the body keeps the score. So the body's also going to have to express this physically. And yet I think there's so few resources on what it means to live out our faith in any regard, lament or otherwise, physically. So I just want to say, I really appreciate that. And there are more examples of that in your book, correct? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Every chapter ends with a sort of an individual practice that readers can try. And there's also at the end of each chapter one that is child friendly or community friendly, because you know, as we've talked about, we as a society and certainly in the church tend to resist grief, and that means that we're not helping children, you know, who grieve the same things that we do, who are living in the same world that we do. We're not giving them the tools oftentimes that they need to express their own grief. What I have written is in hopes that it will be a tool for, you know, for individuals and for families and communities as well.
I've seen, as I was like preparing to talk with you and kind of following some of what your work, you share this story about, you got a card one day, and I don't want to give away the punchline, but it's like, you know, you have permission to, or it's a card that like says, I have permission to punch the next person, that says everything happens for a reason. And, I don't know. I think so much when we see people going through grief, it's like, we don't know how to handle it. So we're like, well, you know, everything's okay with God, or everything happens for a reason. And can you talk about like why true lamenting is in complete opposition to that mindset?
Yes. Yeah. It's so those kinds of things, it shows up on a greeting card because it's in the ether, right?
It's true.
It's what people say to those who are experiencing grief and loss oftentimes. And frequently it's people who profess a Christian faith who are saying those kinds of things. And can I say that I think that most of the time there is at least a heart of intending to be comforting, right? Of intending to offer hope and consolation. But what it actually does for the person that's hearing those things is it just adds pain on top of pain, because they know when they hear something like that, that this person not only doesn't have room for their for the fullness of their grief, but mm-hmm. doesn't even understand it. Mm-hmm. And I think the other place. So again, I think the people saying those things oftentimes mean yeah. well, and they're uncomfortable with grief. Yeah. They don't want to be there. You know, yeah. that's not what they yeah. want.
It's about managing right? their own anxiety, right? Like some you know, other people's pain
that's
that
right.
I can't
that's
instantly fix or solve. You know, it reminds me of my own pain, and it also makes me feel a bit powerless because I can't fix or solve their pain. And so it creates an anxiety response in me. And I know for me, very often at times, if I really dig beneath the words that I've offered to others who are in pain, it's about shrinking their pain down to a level that I can manage, right? Versus really actually right. offering any help that's to right. them. It's like, your grief actually makes me uncomfortable. So I'm going to squash it by telling you kind of a spiritual half truth that is going to minimize it and make me feel better. Right. So on the flip side
absolutely.
Of that, then, Tara, like if we want to be people who understand the spiritual health that comes with the practice of lament. And we want to not only practice it ourselves, but we want to be the kind of people who can hold space for others to do it and make it safe for others to do it, right? What are some of the things that we should right. be saying to people or the posture and approach that we should have with others to make it okay, to invite the expression of grief, to create a healthy space for lament?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's what a great question. I think it's perhaps less what we say and more what we and mm. more how we listen. I think is what I would start with. But what to say is things like, I'm here to listen. Mm-hmm. What do you want to talk mm-hmm. about? Or, you know, to someone who's lost someone they love, you know, what do you need? Do you need a meal? Do you need to laugh? Do you need me to come over and put on a comedy yeah. and just sit with you and laugh? You know, and finding out, you know, what their needs actually are, because, you know, people who are grieving, they need to talk about it, mm-hmm. but they don't always need to talk about it. And so they need to know, we need to let people know that they are welcome to grieve, that we have capacity, you know, to be present to it without squashing it, without letting our own anxiety, you know, kind of fill the space. That we are attentive to, mm-hmm. to them as whole beings, you know, and that there is room, you know, and as we're present to them as whole beings, that there's room for them to kind of move in and out of engaging lament in more direct ways, and simply taking a breath, you know, and as we talked about, like getting your feet in the grass or you know, doing something that makes you laugh or moving your body, you know, taking a walk, taking a run, taking a hike, all of those things. There's got to be room for all of it.
Well, you're really painting this picture of like one of the reasons we lament is because we need it. Our bodies need it. Our souls need it. And as you've said, like the name of your book is Hopeful Lament. So I can still hear like, yes, I need lament, but it seems counterintuitive yeah. to say like, it's hopeful lament. So can you talk, like share this, like specifically, what are we getting at? Why is it hopeful? Like what really is on the other side of mm-hmm. lamenting for us?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it's a paradox, isn't it? Doesn't seem like those words go together, and sometimes it doesn't feel like they go together when we're deep in it, you know, when we're deep in grief. But I, at the end of the day, I have seen and believe it to be true that it is hopeful, and I'd say a couple of things. It's hopeful because it trusts that we have the ability and the capacity to move through grief to the other side of and find whatever mm-hmm. finding a new normal means. It's trusting that is possible to engage safely. Lament is hopeful because it trusts that God actually cares about the fullness of our emotions, including the hard ones, including the painful ones, including the darker ones, the heavier ones, that God not only has capacity, but welcomes it. That is a pretty, that's a significant thought.
You know, Tara, you make a wonderful case in this conversation and in the book for lament being an essential part of not just healthy spirituality, but healthy humanity. And we also, you know, already discussed that lament is not merely words. It also has an embodied expression, but it is also words, right? And I know that when many people contemplate talking to God, they wonder about right things and wrong things to say. And when we're talking about pain and grief, there can be a sense that I only have wrong things to say, or bad things to say, or disrespectful things to say. Like, because our grief is peppered with, it's peppered with salty language. You know, it is peppered with unrefined expressions. It is filled with unvarnished thoughts, and we can feel like our words, as we express them, are not sacred enough or too profane to offer to God. Are there right words and wrong words when we're lamenting and we're speaking to God about our pain?
Yes. So I think what I have found, the more my eyes have sort of been open to see it and ears open to hear it, is there's so much room for salty language, for real raw language with God. And again, looking at the Psalms, the ones that make it to the lectionary are often not the salty language Psalms, but they exist. You know, the Psalms that are asking God to kill off enemies, to destroy, that even their children would be wiped off the face of the earth. Wow. You know, that language is there in the Psalms, and it really takes your breath away sometimes when you read those Psalms and think about, that they are preserved in our, in this holy book for us as examples. And so I think just starting there, we can make a shift to say, actually, I don't have to have neat, tidy, holy language. I can be as raw and real as I need to be. And I think the other example I would speak to briefly, we're coming up on Easter in the season of Lent. You know, you think about that Jesus last night in the garden, and, what he felt free to say, and how his grief had a very physical manifestation. There's permission there. There's welcome.
Tara, I've already put your book in my Amazon cart because I'm so, like, I can feel it in me, like, oh, this is going to be deep for me. Can you, like, tell us a little bit more about, like, what am I going to find when this book shows up, and, like, where can I find it, and more about your work and, like, the resources that you have?
I'm so glad, and I hope it will be a good tool in your world. So you can find Hopeful Lament wherever you buy books. It's of course on Amazon. It's on bookshop.org. It's at the InterVarsity Press website. And for readers that want to kind of keep up with what I'm doing, you can find me on my website, which is taramcdaniel.com, and Tara is spelled like earth in Latin, Terra, mcdaniel.com. You can find me on Instagram, same thing, just my first and last name. And I welcome the ongoing conversation.
Tara, this has been delightful. Thank you so much for having this conversation with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So Rachel, I'm starting to think that, that George Costanza's dad on Seinfeld, I don't know if you're a big Seinfeld fan, but so Mr. Costanza, he invented a religion that is basically lamenting. It's Festivus. it's the airing of grievances. Right. I think it might be like the high holy day for people who love to lament. It's the spiritual Christmas for lamenters. Mm-hmm. If you're a Seinfeld fan out there, I know you're not a Seinfeld person.
I was gonna say I don't know about that, but yeah. I did get a lot out of this conversation and about our need for maybe we do need a Festivus, maybe we need a day to honor lamenting.
We need to grieve, right? Like that's the big point of Tara's conversation with us is like as human beings we need to grieve and like the connection between the human need to grieve and Christian spirituality is lament. It's where we connect our pain to our faith and we express it, right? And I really appreciate her wisdom and her insight on this.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, as she was talking, I was reminded of something a friend shared with me recently about, and I've just like, you know how like when God speaks to you, sometimes he speaks to you in themes, but a friend shared with me that the reason we cry is because it's our body's way of balancing out what we're feeling. Mm. And so the importance of like letting your body be a part of what you're feeling and crying is one way we express that. And so I was really drawn to this idea of like lament as a physical way because like I'll journal and I'll spend time like talking with my friends and being open about grief I've had like in recent years, but like personally doing physical things to like express that grief has just not been a part of my practice. And so that just really resonated with me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really appreciated that as well. And I also really, really was thankful that she connected, grief to just the human experience and how if we refuse to recognize and express our grief, we're giving up on what is a key part of what it means to be human, right? And then also, if we refuse to connect our grief to our faith, we're missing out on what it really means to be a spiritual person and what it means to be, in our context, a Christian person, because it gives you an opportunity for a unique encounter with the divine to take not just your praises, but to also take your pains, your unresolved pains, your unvarnished issues, and take them up to God. That's an opportunity to connect with the divine in an extra vulnerable space and way that you're missing out on if you don't do that. Anything? Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm thinking of you know the expression like work hard, play hard. Yeah. So I'm thinking like, man, I'm going to laugh hard and I'm going to cry hard. I'm going to lament hard because it's like. It's something, and I don't know if this is everybody's experience. It seems to me that, like she said, grief can be very scary. It is frightening, and it can feel like you're going to drown in it sometimes. Or as you shared, it can feel like, who am I to complain about this little thing or to, you know, I should be able to move on from this. At least I don't have it as bad as so-and-so or what else. I mean, we just compare our pain, right? And it's like, versus being somebody who says like, no, I want to feel joy deeply and I'm going to feel pain deeply and kind of be at home in both of those things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. 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 No. And I loved how she, and I thought you asked a great question about getting lost in grief. Like, but I love how she basically said there is no pain so big that if you give it to God, you'll get lost in it and no pain so small that God doesn't care about it. Right. So like there's no grief too big that you'll get lost in it and no grief too small that God doesn't care about it. Because we can use both, it's too big and it's too small to talk ourselves out of articulating it, sitting with it and verbalizing it to anybody, let alone God. So Rachel, what would you say is what's your big takeaway? What's your make it simple kind of takeaway from this conversation?
I think my make it simple, I'm really sitting with this like God created all of me, not just the spiritual me, not just the physical me, but like all of me and really letting my body be a part of my grief and like honoring my body by physically expressing that grief. Yeah. Does that like make sense? Like I really am interested, like integrating not just my thought life and my prayer life and my spiritual crying out to God, but like physically with my body getting in the grass and ripping paper and letting like honoring my body with that experience by letting all of me be a part of and an expression of grief. Yeah. It's like I'm telling you, like a light turned on for me where I was like, oh, this is where I've been heading. Yeah. This is what I needed to like next level. Just like that closeness you feel like spiritually, whenever you really feel deeply, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, yeah. I think there's something, so. To, there's something to that, that we're missing out on. I think in general, when we refuse to kind of materialize, for lack of a better term, like our experience with God, like, you know, we're crying out to an invisible God, right? And, we're talking about internal emotions and thoughts and feelings. And yet our God is, though he's invisible, he's still very real and palpable. Like, so how do we bring that,
right.
that,
those
that,
together.
That divine close into something we can experience? And how do we also then make our spiritual expression, physical, right? Because we are embodied creatures. And so like doing things like, you know, tearing paper as I complain connects my body and my mind, because that's the whole being that I am. But also, like, you know, Steve Cuss, another person who's been on the podcast a couple of times, what he talks about is the importance of, for him, like when he prays, he lights a candle to represent the presence of God. And it sounds so simple, but that's a spiritual practice that's been lived out for millennia. Light a candle to represent the presence of God. And he talks about how that just changes the temperature of his heart, changes the tone in the room when he just acknowledges God's presence in a physical way. Not that God is actually embodied in the lit candle, right? But like he gives God a physical representation in the room through that flame. And he's, and it's that much easier for him to remember, like, no, the real living God is here with me. And I am a real living being. And we're going to sit together and I'm going to talk to him, and I'm going to tear some paper if I need to, the physical really does matter. Yeah. For me, my big takeaway is just the reminder that she gave us that, to refuse to lament is to forego a key part of your humanity, but also your spirituality. Mm-hmm. That, to lament is human, and it's also Christian, right? And that if I refuse to connect my grief and my spirituality, I'm missing out on a very special kind of encounter with God. If I only talk to him, in my urgent moments or my praise moments, I'm missing out on meeting with him in my desperate and angry moments too. Because there's a unique experience with him to be had and with his promises, in those moments too. So yeah, so that's my make it simple reminder. Yeah. Just a reminder for the audience, if you want to get Tara's book, the book is called Hopeful Lament, Tending Our Grief Through Spiritual Practices. And as she said, it is available wherever books are sold. Well, Rachel, I hope you press purchase on that Amazon cart of yours, and you get this book, because if you're thinking the same thing I am, I think it's going to be a great resource for us.
Absolutely. And I also, just for people to know, she's active on Instagram. It's at Tara, and it's T-E-R-R-A McDaniel. And she does post some really lovely stuff. This has been one of my favorite episodes to prepare for, has been like going down the rabbit hole of what she's sharing on social media. Yeah. So for people, go follow her there as well.
Yeah, she has a lot of wisdom. It's worth a follow. It really is.
For sure.
Great. Hey, Rachel, thanks again for another just kind of fascinating and useful conversation. Yeah. What do you say we do it again?
Let's do it.
Thanks for helping us make it simple. The show is produced by MPM. Our editor is Marcia Lambeth. Artwork for the show was designed by Brenton Little. Do you have a topic you'd like us to tackle or an expert you'd like us to chat with? Send your ideas to info@mattpopovitz.com. That's info@mattpovitz.com. And if you'd like more information about Make It Simple or MPM, just head to mattpopovitz.com.